learning more about cultural places and to protect them and to be more active and our Native people being more empowered in that.
Old Tlingit stories meet modern archaeology in the Chilkat Valley. And the next environmental study on the road to Juneau gets underway. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That news and more up next. Expect to see more Norwegians in a couple years. Cruise ships, that is. Norwegian Cruise Line announced Tuesday the Norwegian Sun in 2013 will join their existing two ships that already dock in Skagway during the summer cruise season. Norwegian CEO Kevin Sheehan said this week that a decision to bring a total of three ships back to Alaska is related to last year's decision by the state to significantly lower the cruise ship head tax. In 2009, the last time Norwegian had three ships in the Lynn Canal, the cruise line had said the head tax was one reason they were deciding to pull a ship from Alaskan waters. Governor Sean Parnell, who signed the controversial 2010 legislation to lower that tax, said this week, quote, "The Norwegian addition is evidence that lowering taxes on an industry leads to increased investment." The Sun, a 1,936-passenger ship, is slightly smaller than the Norwegian Jewel and Norwegian Pearl that already run through the Inside Passage and dock in Skagway, where passengers have access to trips there and in the Chilkat Valley. The addition of one large cruise ship has the potential to bring approximately 40,000 more visitors in 2013. The Sun will sail seven-night, one-way itineraries between Vancouver, British Columbia, and Whittier, Alaska, with several southeast stops, including Skagway, for both directions. The cruise line is also expanding by offering more land packages to extend cruises, saying there is a lot of demand for increased capacity in Alaska and more varied cruises. The state has selected HDR, Inc. as the firm to complete the court-ordered supplemental environmental impact statement for the Juneau Access Project. The firm has experience preparing Federal Highway Administration reports like this in Alaska and will work with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on the study. The report was ordered by Federal District Court Judge John Sedwick in 2009 when he directed the Highways Administration to provide more detail on a road alternative, that being improvements to the existing ferries and terminals in northern southeast Alaska. DOT will also have to analyze the five other legal claims from Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. The first environmental impact statement was completed in 2006, and DOT says a lot of environmental laws and regulations have changed since then, and new geological information is available. The study will also seek comments from the public over the next 2 months, including an informational newsletter being sent to residents in Haines and Skagway. A draft of the new EIS is expected by late 2012, with public hearings the following January. The final study should be complete by June 2013. Let's say around 100 years from now, archaeologists are digging around the Lynn Canal and uncover the remnants of your house. What story would they tell about you and the way you lived? Archaeologist Anastasia Wiley and a team of local researchers spent the past season doing just that for Gus Claney.
He was the father of many of the Hotches. Much of the Hotch line all came from Gus Claney.
And he kept a hunting cabin at 13 Mile on the Haines Highway in the 1930s.
13 Mile had a wooden cabin that was collapsed and 35 pits.
Pits for storing food. The team of local researchers also found his outhouse and his bathhouse, made of wood that was hand-hewn or made out with a saw.
So it was really interesting. He was an interesting person.
Interesting to an archaeologist, sure, but also to some of the researchers who were working with Wiley at 13 Mile.
My name is Marcia Hotch.
The dig was also an opportunity for descendants of Claney and members of his clan like Klukwan's Marcia Hotch to learn about modern archaeology. The Native Archaeological Training Program, which Wiley is modeled after similar programs in California, brought in eight people from Haines Chilkoot Indian Association and Klukwan's Chilkat Indian Village.
I think my most favorite part about it was when we were looking at the different types of pits, and we went and looked at up in the Chilkoot area, and she took us into the forest. So there we were standing next to this huge square, a hole in a pit in the ground. But if I was in there just picking berries or just tromping around, I would have just walked over them. But as I was in there, it was just like, and then I saw another square, and then another one, and I'm like, oh my goodness, my hair just...
The boy you just saw did a place name study on all of the Inche place names. There's a place name for 13 Mile called Tanu. Mm. It was called King Salmon Fort. Mm. And the question was, why was it called King Salmon Fort? Well, when we got into the research, we found out there used to be a lake there.
When the Department of Transportation decades ago put the road in, they diverted the river that fed the lake, eliminating it altogether. Years later, it was DOT again that found the site while surveying around the Haines Highway. The Forest Service has been working around the site as they've been looking at the possibility of putting a road near there, and we're also working on the documentation. Roy Josephson from the local office of the Forest Service worked on site with the crew.
He did tree ring coring for us, and the results of the tree ring coring showed that the forest that's there now wasn't even there starting until the turn of the century, which was really interesting.
Besides the professional workers, each of the 8 students, like Marcia, attended class during the day and completed research in the field through the week and weekend.
Patrick Philpott, many of you know, he worked on architectural drawings and historic artifacts. Christopher Hodge, he's the GPIS GIS guy from Kwekwan.
The team used artifacts like a jar that used to hold Libby's dill pickles and a Maxwell House coffee can to date the occupation of the site. The information compiled on the site also includes oral interviews with area residents who have memories from when the camp was up and running. Locals like Kwekwan's Evelyn Hotch.
She was the great-granddaughter of Gus Claney, and when she was 5 years old, she went to this cabin, so she could tell us all about it. It was a winter trapping cabin, and the reason those pits are there, this is really interesting. This man, Gus Claney, when he was 5 years old, his sister got married to a white man, and they took him to Dawson City, and they taught him English. Well, this is back at the turn of the century, 1900, 1905. So when he came back as a teenager, he was one of the few people, if not the only person, native person that could speak English. So when the Port Chilkoot soldiers were here, they all used him as the guide and everything because they could talk to him, and he could get together crews for them and all that kind of thing.
And in the winter, dog teams were the basic mode of transportation. Wiley says Claney had a dog team, and so did the soldiers. That's at least 16 dogs, requiring 1,500 calories each per day.
And so what the Tlingit people did was they had these food storage pits. And that's what these pits are. They're for the late fall, right now, this time of year, the salmon, the dog salmon and so forth. And they'd fill the pits up and fill them with water, and they'd freeze. And then they'd use it for dog food, so they didn't have to. I mean, how are you going to get dog food for all these dogs while you're, you know, doing the guiding and so forth, the hunting guides? So we're pretty sure that's what the pits were. Now, listen to how this man was really something else. Around the pits where the dog food was are smaller pits that are shallow, and they were for foothold traps so he could trap at the same time because he was a fur trapper.
The bulk of the documentation on the story at 13 Mile is done, and the project is on its way to public review. But the opportunity for locals to learn modern technology continues. Another class offering credit through University of Alaska Southeast is beginning for locals, such as the descendants of those people who once handled the artifacts. 10 people are already signed up for the next session in the spring, with the opportunity for graduates of this program to work as assistants. Hotch is one of them.
And I think learning the different techniques, like how to do a dig, I think that's very important. And also learning more about cultural places and to protect them and to be more active and our Native people being more empowered in that. And knowing that coming up on these things and not knowing what to do with them in the past, and I think now I think we're better able to be more assertive in, I think, saying, you know, we want to be a part of this.
I'm trying to hone them so that they're really very well experienced, well-rounded archaeologists. So, and they all enjoy it. They love it. And you know what's interesting too, though, is they know so much inside them. And when you start talking, it comes out.
I think it, because it's more home, it's home, and you know it's real, and it's exciting. And I think one of my part was also contributing the language part and being able to decipher some of the place names and some of the language that we might have come across in some of our researches.
You know, I really enjoy archaeology, and to do it, if it has an overarching purpose like this, it really makes me feel good, you know. It makes me feel like I'm contributing something, you know. Trying to save archaeological sites is important, and I've done that my whole life. But working so closely with tribal groups has been very rewarding for me.
That was Anastasia Wiley, archaeologist with the Scientific Resource Surveys. More information on SRS Cultural Resources projects throughout the Pacific Northwest is at their website, srscorp.net. Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.